is Southside.
And proving that by far, she's proving to be one of the most popular legal correspondents we've ever actually had, and a true star in all so many ways, whether she's contributing to Radio 4, BBC Radio 4's Money Box, whether she's doing a variety of things as a partner on behalf of Thomas Egger, LLP. We're delighted to be able to welcome back to Southside after her first sensational appearance with us a few weeks ago, Nicola Plant. Are you indeed there, Nicola?
I am. Good morning. Thank you. How do I ever live up to that?
Oh, you just have to simply be yourself.
I'll do my best.
That's the important thing. Fantastic stuff there. So we got a couple of specific lines that came in from people who heard you obviously the first time around, and clearly looking at the specialisms in terms of power of attorney, which is something we were speaking of last time around. And a couple of interesting lines here, which actually deals with, obviously, how can you actually have a right of reply or recourse, etc., and actually where does the legality stand? And the first question was really, what happens in the event of where there's just one particular soul who is the sole likely beneficiary of a will, etc., and the solicitor in question actually decides, no, they're going to hold up, they're going to hold fire, or going to open it up and show it to people who've got nothing to do with the family whatsoever?
Yes, I mean, this is a difficult area, particularly where, and I think in the case that you're referring to, the attorney was the solicitor, and then there's some dispute when the individual has died, there's some dispute about where the money has gone. Now, when you act as an attorney, you are acting under the trust of that individual, and particularly if you're a professional, then the duty of care to your client is that much greater. So if the family are aware that money has gone missing after the death of the individual, then they are perfectly entitled to what we call bring the solicitor into account, so to actually ask for full accounts during that period that the attorney was acting. If the solicitor refuses, then they can speak to what's called the Office of the Public Guardian, who are the sort of administrative function that look after powers of attorney, and they can raise the issue there, and the Office of the Public Guardian can then ask the solicitor to produce accounts. If they still have concerns, they can, of course, report them to our governing body, who's the Solicitors Regulatory Authorities, and make a formal complaint.
So presumably the governing body is the equivalent to Ofcom for broadcasters, really?
Exactly, yes. The Law Society is our union, but our governing body is the Solicitors Regulatory Authority. So if there's a complaint made against the solicitor, they're the individuals that would investigate it.
Okay, I think that hopefully will solve the issue from that point of view. Now, another case that was sort of cropped up again, it was a letter obviously mentioning no names here. If you actually have a family of three, shall we say, and you have the two elder siblings and a younger sibling as well, and the two elder siblings actually agree that at 21 they're going to actually receive and accept their inheritance and everything's going to be clear, and they sign papers to accept this, and they're not going to have any call whatsoever on the younger sibling in any way, shape or form. What happens if they change their minds in subsequent years, if parents pass on and suddenly there's a disagreement, as occasionally sadly tends to happen with human beings being human beings at times, and one of the siblings effectively decides to remove everything from the house, they steal everything from that point of view, what's the legality position there? I mean, is
okay. Well, certainly in this case it sounds as though the two eldest, in effect, are you suggesting that they had their inheritance earlier?
It's a bit like the prodigal son, but without the happy ending, I think.
Yeah,
really.
It's a very difficult one, because parents, there's no law that says parents have to treat their children equally, although most parents want to. And in a situation where a deal is done with the children that is believed to be recognising their inheritance earlier, and then later they come back to get more. Well, what the law says is that you can't give up a right to something that in effect you don't inherit until the person's died. So it really would depend on what the will says. Now, if the will said that they left everything to the youngest child because the parent believed that they had sorted out the elder children while they were still alive, then the elder children would have to go against the estate under what's called the Inheritance Act. And it's actually quite difficult for grown-up children to do that. However, there's a distinction between making a claim and actually going in and taking stuff while you still can. And that's misappropriation. That's potentially theft. And, again, you report it to the police or you go and seek advice from a solicitor.
you know, sometimes, Nicola, it would be a lot easier if we just actually treat each other as human beings. That's the key thing.
It is. And, you know, the worst thing is when it is over personal effects, because this is what it... You tend to get the arguments in estates over who's been in and taken what, because they're the things that have a sentimental value. And that is very difficult because they're not necessarily of such a high value that it's worth bringing a claim against the individual. So... Mm-hmm. It isn't always fair, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. And, of course, the other advantage is that having somebody from your own point of view who can be dispassionate and objective about these kind of things and understands the law scenario as it's been developed and as it has been written and rewritten and evolved can obviously benefit. And that really, in a sense, is the answer to folks who say, solicitors, we don't need them.
Well, we do, you know, when we're working with clients, the idea is that if we see you early enough, we actually go over all the potential pitfalls with clients at the beginning and try to avoid them happening in the first place. I mean, I had one lovely old lady who, I remember she had coloured dots on the bottom of all her items, all the items in her house, and everything was colour-coded, and then she had a list. So each beneficiary had a colour, and everything was marked on this list so that anyone could come in and they knew exactly what they were entitled to.
It's extraordinary. It's more like OCD, I would say.
That was quite extreme. Yeah. But yeah, I think the important thing with families is actually dealing with the issues up front, and then everybody knows what's going to happen when, and it's much easier for people to get on.
And the importance, of course, of making a will, because, I mean, we've heard a variety of areas where you say, well, OK, let's just leave it all to the tax officer, etc. But if you don't necessarily want to do that, then maybe you need to think seriously about working through that. And we talked about this, obviously, in your first item with us, really, that sometimes the kind of bespoke wills are important, but actually getting the kind of off-the-shelf manifestos are not necessarily the best way forward for these kind of things.
It's not just getting the right things to the right people at the right time. It's also seeing if there are any other opportunities for tax planning or asset protection, and that's the value that a solicitor can give.
Yeah. Okay, well, last time around, of course, we had a young man who was just thinking about entering journalism as a career, as Joe Hudson, who was obviously keen to touch base with your good self. We have Simon Marshall, who's actually a graduate from which university in the States?
Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee.
Marvellous. So,
hello, Simon.
Hello.
Developing various other bits and pieces. Again, looking to possibly go into journalism as a career in various ways. Key golfer, in fact, represented England is that right?
When I was younger, yeah.
Yep. So, go on. Questions for Nicola, although probably she's not necessarily a sports legal expert. So.
One question I do have for you, Nicola, is we've seen recently, I know there was a Panorama special about wills and how we can protect ourselves against being vulnerable to such things. What advice would you give people writing wills and, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, this is a hot topic in the profession at the moment, because wills, writing wills, is one of the unregulated activities that solicitors do. And what I mean by that is there are certain activities that you can only do if you're a solicitor. And for example, one of those is taking out the grant of probate. And for many years, there's been a big push on the profession to actually get rid of those regulated activities. What's actually happened is that it's coming to light more and more that a lot of wills prepared by unqualified, will draftsmen who set themselves up in business as will drafters with no qualifications and usually no insurance. So if things go wrong, they can't be sued. And more of these are coming to light as actually being negligent. And so the profession is obviously saying, well, rather than reducing the list of regulated activities, you ought to be making sure that people who are drafting wills know what they're doing and are insured, because actually we're not on an equal footing. And the other view there is, well, hold on, you're just saying that because you'll lose out on the fees if we do that. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, even if your estate, very few estates are simple, and it's the unknown unknowns, as Donald Rumsfeld would say. You don't know. You may think you have a simple estate, but until you seek the advice of someone who's actually done the years of work and qualifications, you just don't know what the pitfalls are. And so there really is no substitution for getting good advice.
Says it all, really, sort of thing through in so many ways.
On the sport front, Simon, I do actually head up our sports and media team.
Okay.
So That's an area I cover as well.
So. Well, you see, there we are. You see, that's the thing we found with you, Nicola. Just as we think, we work on that focus, there's a whole new talent that you actually bring to the whole scenario, which is fantastic stuff. And it is that a growing scene. I mean, obviously, I suppose Tiger Woods could have benefited from, or probably will still benefit more in the divorce lawyers recently from his golfing scenarios.
Well, this is what our sports and media team focus on. It's not just the sports legal advice, obviously that's where we bring the expertise, but often these are individuals who they need a particular style of working with them, and you know, the danger is that every solicitor in the firm probably wants to have them as a client, but not necessarily for the right reasons. And it's not all glamour, I can tell you.
I just had a notion there, Nicola, of you being the equivalent of an Ally McBeal in the midst of a sort of Ally McBeal-esque office in many ways.
But sometimes it is like that. Believe me, that's what.
Except it's fair to say, Nicola, that you're much more attractive than Calista Flockhart could ever be.
So, oh, thank you.
Key thing from that point of view. Nicola, it's been fabulous again, just getting some fascinating insights there into interesting specific cases that sort of were keen to obviously follow through on that. Got a couple of final questions. I think you kind of know what they are now. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us here at Southside Broadcasting?
It's been fun as ever.
And can we look forward to hopefully connecting up with you again in the very near future?
I look forward to it.